Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Asif Sharif. This is the first time that I've seen at Tech Ed there has been a dedicated session on requirements management. There is an increasing demand for Visual Studio to support requirements management. And so Microsoft has been doing a whole bunch of different things, like the support of TFS in Excel, the PowerPoint storyboarding, and so on and so forth. But this need for having TFS be the hub of requirements, as much as all other aspects of ALM, is increasingly getting more important. From the very beginning, Microsoft has had a strategy that TFS should be the central point of information. So when you look at work item management, if you look at test management, source code management, build management, release management, and so on and so forth, Visual Studio certainly has become sort of this comprehensive ALM solution. But requirements management is one area where there are other solutions required. One of the things you might have heard at this event is Microsoft has exposed many APIs to Team Foundation Server so that other external systems can connect to it. And this is the new Microsoft approach, I think, of openness. Certainly the open source support that Microsoft has announced recently, and also its open API or open ALM approach to using TFS as that central hub, but talking to all other systems that your companies might be using. Now, in trying to do that, I'd like to actually introduce an idea. There's a company called OpsHub. Sandeep, the gentleman right in the back there, he's the principal of that organization. And what they do is they actually develop solutions for other systems from IBM and Serena and so on to talk to TFS. So if you want to do a migration from those systems to TFS, there are solutions that are actually available for you to do that. This session is about requirements management. We will talk about how you can use Microsoft Office, Word, Excel, Visio, Outlook. You probably already know how to use Excel from a work item management perspective and storyboarding that's there. But we'll talk about some of the other tools as how they can help you help your user base be more effective working with TFS in your ALM practice. Again, my name is Asif Sharif. I'm the founder of EDEF Technologies. When I was young and smart, I used to be a developer. About 10 years ago, my focus came to requirements management. And so I started to, of course, as a developer, you're always around requirements. If you're architecting, if you're doing any of those things, you're always around requirements. But about 10 years ago, I started to completely focus on requirements management. I was helping organizations implement RM processes and systems. I was researching on what is working, what is not working. Of course, one of the phenomenons that you start to see today is in a hybrid model. So some people are using waterfall or iterative, others are using agile. Some people are starting to sort of find a middle ground between the two. I was once talking to a good friend of mine from within Microsoft, and he told me the war of methodologies is over. We have seen a lot of different methodologies come and go. People are intelligent enough now to determine for themselves what's going to work for you, what part of what methodology is going to work for you. So what I'm going to do is to begin by talking about this stats. So it's important to, from time to look at history and see how have we progressed? Have we made things better? And so what you will see in here is that there is good news. We've actually gotten better. Now, this is 2 years old, but what's interesting is that Gartner had done a survey and found a study where they found numbers slightly worse than this. So we weren't quite doing as well, according to Gartner, as this one shows. But there is a tendency, a trend here, where we are getting better at doing projects. And of course, the dominant factor that people cite why projects tend to fail is because requirements are not done correctly. So let's talk about the history of evolution. So of course, way back when we did mainframe systems, we had to be extremely specific as to what has to be done. As technology evolved, we became a little bit more agile. We came up with waterfall, then iterative, and now we are more into the agile world. Not everybody does agile, but a lot of people do. But it's certainly a new mindset that we have established. But what is important is that the conversations we are having with the right people is continuing to happen. So when we did waterfall, we had upfront conversation. When we were doing iterative, we had reoccurring interim conversations. But now in Agile, we are in a state of constant conversation, which is wonderful because it is about people. The idea of the science of technology and process can be defined and managed a lot better than the social science of working with people. And so people need to stay in the forefront of how we do app dev. So Agile, it's about constant conversation. That's how I would define it. Now, requirements are called many things, and I'm sure there's other stuff that you call it, right? So if you're up with the latest trends, you probably call your requirements product backlog items, which is fundamentally requirements. It's a generic, nebulous term that can fit anything into it. But regardless of what you call it, there's always been something we call requirements where we are having that conversation with our stakeholders. The most common tool that people use today, and according to Gartner, actually, over 50% of the companies continue to use Microsoft Office for requirements management, whether they're writing user stories or they're writing software requirement specification or use cases, it doesn't matter. 50% of organizations use Office completely. There are others who may use a tool, but augment it with Office. So what I'm going to suggest to you is instead of trying to change people, use Office to do what you want to do, because they're comfortable in using Office. People don't change fast. Our technology changes, especially now, at a tremendously rapid pace. So if you have masses of people that contribute to what you need to do, because software development is a team sport, and you do want everybody to engage in the process in whatever manner that is appropriate, you'll find that Office is highly accessible, and people know how to use it, they have it, and so on and so forth. So you might then say, Asif, there's a problem. The problem is using a document-centric approach leads to information fragmentation, leads to information redundancy. The same information appears 10 places, which is the right version of the information that I should rely on. It leads to memory loss. When you have source code, you baseline it. You have the history. Documents tend to, as a comprehensive knowledge base, it loses memory. Or there's lack of reuse. Or you don't have structure where you do not have the right ontology, the right verbiage, a consistent level of verbiage to talk about things. And there's lack of validation, and there's lack of automation. And so you might come up with many reasons. So what I'm going to show you today is that you don't have to worry about that anymore. Smart Office for TFS solves that problem, where Visual Studio Team Foundation Server is the central hub of your information. All of these tools simply talk to TFS bidirectionally. And throughout the session, So after my PowerPoint is done, which is in about just a couple of more minutes, I'll get into demonstrating some of these solutions and to show you how you can actually use this. When these problems are solved, they are no more. So we can make it life easier for our stakeholders. So this is what it looks like now. You're connecting Word, Excel, Visio, Outlook to Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server. What we'll see in the demonstration is that information from Word goes to TFS. Information from TFS comes back to Word. You'll have the ability to generate reports, author your user stories and requirement specs in Word. We'll then take a look at my favorite tool, Smart Visio. I was one day in a shower, I had an epiphany, and I knew what Smart Visio had to be, so we went and built it. So you'll see it, I'm sure you'll love it. That's really powerful. Smart Excel. What Smart Excel is about generating traceability matrices. So if you work for a medical devices company, you work for an insurance company, some financial company, you work for companies that actually have quality management processes defined, you need to have traceability matrices. And in TFS today, it is a hard thing to produce. So now we've made that very simple for you to do that. And then we'll take a look at Outlook, where we have actually extended the idea of work item management in some interesting ways, so we'll show you that. Or when you get an email with a bug and you can just convert that email into a work item. And then finally, if you have time, I'll show you a preview of a work item baseline for TFS. So it's an online tool that allows you to baseline work items. So in TFS today, you can baseline source code, but what you cannot do is you cannot baseline work items. So if you want to not have that memory loss, so you could go back in time and say, tell me how's the world on this date, you can do that. And then see comparisons and all kinds of other things. It also supports evergreening scenarios where you want to create branches of work item sets. All right, so let's get into the demo piece. By the way, I will have about 10, 15 minutes in the end, so if you have any questions, you can hold them, and we'll have some time in the end for that. All right. So what you're looking here is at a Word document, and the Word document has a certain structure to it. There's a feature, there's some title, there's some description with a table in it. There's the area path, the duration path, there's the PBI. And in the PBI, in the title, there's, of course, the user story, and there's an image in the description. And then there are other PBIs with information. There's a tabular data for impediments and so on. So what you can do is you can create Word specifications, and then you can connect it to a given team project. So here I have TechEd 2014 RM project. I'll connect to that, and when I've connected to that, I can simply click on publish, and it will push the data out to TFS. So there it is. Now, let's go to the web access and refresh the data here, and you will see here's my my PBI with the table in it. I have my feature, and now here my PBI with the image in it, and so on and so forth. In the event that you actually go and update the content in here, then in Smart Word, all you have to do is hit refresh and gets the data back in Word. So now what happens is your documents never get outdated. So one of the reasons people have problems with the document-centric approach is your documents get out of sync, right? No more. Your documents don't have to get out of sync. Your document actually has the same exact information as you had authored in it and or what's in the database. Now, let's take a look at a slightly different scenario. I'll delete the content here. I'm starting a brand new document. What I can do is I can just say insert a smart part. It tells me there's a feature there. And then I'm going to insert a PBI there or two. And then I can start to go and define my PBIs and features and so on. And when I'm done with it, I simply click Publish. And it pushes it out to TFS. One of the recurring themes we hear is that people have a hard time, especially business analysts, systems analysts, often product owners and project managers, to use tools that are more specialized other than Word to do their requirements. Now you can actually just use Word and do your write your specs directly in Word. All right, so one use case is to author directly in Word. The second use case you have here is you have the ability to run a query, and by running the query, get all the work items directly in Word as a report. So now you have this ability to generate reports from TFS. So you could say, hey, you know, give me all my defects that are open, or give me all my requirements in the sprint, or whatever the case may be. Just the way you define your query, the results then gets rendered in the format that you've defined the template in. The other approach you have is you can do get work item, and get work item is very specific. You can sort of run a query, get all the work items, check, bring it in, and you can bring in your work items into the Word document directly from there. Now consider, so those are the two use cases. You can author in it, keep the documents current, and the second use case is reporting. The third use case you have is collaboration. So what we did was that when you have your document, whether you've run a report or whatever, you can go and you can send the document to somebody else who may not have Smart Word. They will turn on their track changes, and they'll start to do whatever they need to do. And of course, this dropdown list is coming from TFS. If you had the state field in here, the state would come from there, so you can have approvals done directly in Word and so on and so forth. So they update the document, they send it back to you as they would normally do. You would get the document back. You would accept or reject the various changes, and then you would publish the content back to TFS. Okay? So you're still keeping many of your existing processes intact, but not have to rekey the data in or have your documents get out of date. The other approach that we took, which was an interesting approach, was Microsoft came up with the feedback work item in 2012. TFS 2012, I think 2012, 2013. Anyways, they have it right now. I'm certain of that. So now what you can do is you can actually bring up the feedback panel on the right-hand side, and I can see against this particular feature, I already have a feedback. I could go to another feature, say that I love Smart Word for TFS. I'll give it a 5-star, no bias here, and I'll submit my feedback. So what we do at that point is that we actually create a feedback work item, and the feedback work item in turn is linked to the feature on which the feedback is provided, and you can now assign this to people. You can close your feedback and manage that feedback. What happens in Word is you send the Word to 10 people, they all provide feedback. After a couple of iterations, you have no idea how many feedback came from whom, because now you have many different variations of the document and so on with you. With doing it in the feedback management approach, you actually have a history of it. People can get notifications and so on and so forth, but you're managing your feedback on the work items. And in Outlook, we have done the same thing as well. So you can go to Outlook and do this kinds of stuff as well. So you might be thinking, how do I go ahead and how do I define a template? That must be perhaps difficult, and it is not. And of course, I only said that because I wanted my point to be clear. So it's very easy to create templates. So what you can do is I'll open up my, I'll connect to a project, and from the project, I can go and I can say, okay, hey, you know what, I want a feature, and the feature needs to have some PBIs, and I'm also going to have some impediments as tables. And now I can go ahead and save this document as a DOTX file, a Word template file, that you can distribute and have your, all your teams use that template. Okay. Now, in this case, I have just a very few fields that I've used, but you can use all the fields, whether these fields are custom fields or out-of-the-box fields of these work items, whether your work item types are custom or out-of-the-box, doesn't matter. SmartOffice supports both on-prem and online versions of TFS, and of course, including your custom process templates. So that's how you create a template. So SmartWord is very simple to use, and what we're going to do now, it will actually get into looking at SmartVisio. How many of you have seen diagrams like this, swim lane or functional flow diagram? Yeah, most of you have. This is a very common type of diagramming people do to model their business processes. You'll be surprised as to how much information exists in this diagram. It's actually full of excellent information. And so let me show you what information this has. So first thing, again, what I'm going to do is I'm simply going to connect to our project, and you will see a panel appears on the right-hand side. The first thing I'm going to do, I've selected the page, which is the diagram. I'm going to say to it, to SmartVisio, that I want to create a feature, and the feature is called Purchase Processing Workflow. And I can flesh out all my details of the feature, and now I've created a feature. And this feature is actually linked to the page. Then I'm going to go to my register activity, and I'm going to say I'm going to define a product backlog item that says, as a customer, I can register so that I have an account. And then I can define my acceptance criteria and so on. And likewise, I can go and define all my various PBIs that are actually a derivation of my business process model. Because if you don't have that, then you're just making up your PBIs and your requirements. A process model makes it very real. Now, you can also go to the bulkhead view, where in bulkhead view, you can create multiple work items against the various shapes very quickly. Of course, you can go as a customer, I can log in so that blah, blah, blah. So you can create your PBIs against this very quickly. And now if I go to login, you will see in login I have this PBI that's linked to it, and I created that through my bulk add feature. So now I've created a whole bunch of work items. You'll find that if you have a connector, connectors in many types of diagrams like BPMN models or context diagrams actually represent a user activity, which therefore might lead to a user story. So here I'm going to say, let's support delayed shipment. So now I've created things against connectors as well. When you're decomposing your information, like this register activity, I may go and define certain tasks that we need to design OAuth integration, because that's hot now. We may define certain impediments. And so now I'm starting to decompose this PBI and create other things to it within Visio. You will see that as I go to the page again, you can see my entire work item decomposition happening on the right-hand side. So I'm doing it in a visual context, but the work item relationships are all getting created for me. Now, requirements statements are important. But consider, how might somebody use this process? How many ways are there to use the process? There are many ways to use the process. You can start from here, you can go this way, you can do that way. So what are the scenarios? So if you want to detect the scenarios, then you basically click on Generate Scenarios, and it goes and calculates and finds that there are actually three different scenarios. There are three ways to go from start to end. And that's your first scenario. That's your second scenario, going through the delayed shipment path. And here's my third scenario. So now I can create a work item. I'm going to call this delayed shipment scenario. And here's my description based on my flow. I can publish this. And this shows up here. Now, what's interesting is that not only did we create a scenario, but it actually linked all the work items that are covered by the scenario to that scenario as well. So you know the scenario will cover these three or four user stories. In the event that you come from a more of a waterfall or iterative process of application development and you write use cases, you might be saying to yourself that, hey, if you can generate scenarios, use case would be a natural step because use case is really bringing together all the scenarios in one artifact. That's essentially what it is. So what you can do there is you can click on the use case tab, and what it does is shows you the scenarios. The first scenario here is the happy path. The second scenario here is delayed shipment. And the third scenario here is where shopping is aborted. And I'm just going to call this purchase processing use case. And you will see here now, this is my use case there. I can go ahead and publish this. And our use case is here now. All the scenarios are there, and a screenshot is there. And as before, our use case also has all the requirements that actually are covered by that use case. So at this point in time, you're now looking at the tabs. And you're saying, okay, well, next you're going to show us test cases. And that is correct. I'm going to show you test cases because writing test cases manually is very time-consuming. And this business process actually has the test case scenarios in it. So you can click on test case tab. It goes and generates the test cases. There are four different test cases here. Now, if I created another branch from here or had a loop back, there could be six or seven or eight. So the number of test cases increase quite fast. And writing those test cases manually is a major endeavor. And so most people don't do it. At best, they'll wing it. And that's not a good idea. So what we're going to do here is we're going to go here and we're going to say this is my basic path test case. These are my steps. I can go and change the steps in here if I like. And while I'm looking at the flow, I can do that, and then I can go and I can publish it. And then I'm going to go to the next one, and I'm going to say this is my delayed shipment test case. I'll publish that. I'll go here. I'll call this, this is my aborted shopping test case. I'll publish that. And I'm only publishing all of this because later on I want to show you the traceability matrix between requirements and test cases. You will see how it actually covers it. And then lastly, what we'll do is we'll do a complete, this is a complete regression test. Because what this does is it goes through here, takes a loop, comes back here, it's delayed, and then goes and closes the thing. And we'll publish this test case as well. So now if you go to Web Access, you will see that this is my purchase processing workflow that has a product backlog item, a task, and an impediment. It's got other PBIs in here and several test cases linked to it. Each test case, when I open it up, you will see that these are the steps in it. It's got all the requirements or user stories that are linked to it, and it also has the visual that that is covered by the test case. All right? So you can see the power of doing a business process model. It's incredibly powerful. And if you, again, come from a sort of structured requirement space, you already know this. If you're doing Agile, you can still see that in an Agile world, a process model like this can be the source of great information. So what we then did was we started to sort of look at, things like what Microsoft has done with PowerPoint storyboarding. And we said, how do we connect the two? So I'm doing a process. I want to see this, the storyboarding slides here. So what you can now do is you can actually connect your visuals to your PowerPoint deck. Sorry, you can connect your PowerPoint storyboarding directly to the activities, and this then becomes available directly in here. So now if I'm walking somebody through the process, I can click on certain things and show them what the visuals related to it is. So now in here, you have not only all your work items linked to it, but your storyboarding in PowerPoint or your PowerPoint deck in general is now accessible in this mode. You can also invoke a storyboarding, start storyboarding from here, and say, this is what my register page is going to look like, and take people through this exercise. So for those of you who actually do practice business process modeling, or your folks do that, you'll find that the idea of doing drill down, so say register itself has another process that actually specifies what that's going to be. So you just click on drill down, and what it does is this creates a new tab with that user story that was linked to that shape being linked to the page. So now I can go ahead and I can build out my registration process, and against my various shapes, create my PBIs as I need to. And then you'll see my decomposition is taking place there. And if I go to page one again, you will see that that's shown here. So I could create a multi-tiered business process and have all my work items roll up automatically. So one of the things that that we then did was we said, okay, fine, so people are going to use this and they're going to change the state of the various work items as people are working on it, like so. And so as people are working on it, what you can do is you can actually click on Show State Overlay, and what it does, it color codes the various shapes and connectors. And what this is showing you is that these items are done, this is proposed, these are new, and so on and so forth. And everything that's white, that's not colored, is not linked to any work item. So that's a possible gap. You missed something. Or otherwise, this is at least a quick process-centric status of your work. We've also extended this. What we have done is we have said, get metadata. And what metadata does, it gets a whole bunch of other relevant information, like how many defects are opened against this work item, how many test cases have passed, how many have failed, and all kinds of other information. And then using the Visio data graphics, you can actually create a process-centric dashboard. So imagine having these high-level processes and being able to see your dashboard. You can see where the problems are and what the status of things are, but again, from a process-centric perspective. So we thought that was awesome. All right, so just before I move into Smart Excel, traceability helps us visualize how things are interconnected or not. So what we said was, why don't we provide a way to run a query or do get work items, and based on that, render a mind map directly in Visio. So in the work item visualization pane, you have the ability to run a query and then be able to visualize how your work items are connected through a mind map view. And of course, because it is based on either get work items or queries, you can then construct what is it that you want to visualize. You can be very explicit about it. So one of the things that we did as we were looking at solving this problem is we said to ourselves, we must remain humble and not assume what people want and start to sort of configure things in some specific ways. So we rely a lot on queries and get work items so that you can actually decide what is important to you. All right. Which then leads me into Smart Excel. How many of you have worked with traceability matrices, either built it or looked at it or whatever? All right, so half the people. When we speak to organizations that require traceability matrix, so if you look at a medical instrumentation firm, they have to report FDA, and FDA demands that you have that. Or if you're reporting to financial authorities where they want this kind of auditability, then you need it. Or if you have certain quality programs in place, you want to make sure that your test cases are connected or have proper coverage with your requirements. So in Smart Excel, what we did was we said, okay, there are two types of traceability matrices that are really important. In the first traceability matrix, you can choose. So I'm going to choose my feature in PBI in one. And in the other query, what I'm going to do is I'm going to search for all my test cases. And I'm going to render this report here. And of course, I have very few information here. But this tells you which of my PBIs are covered with test cases and which aren't. And what you'll see here is that the number two here is actually representing the priority of the work items. And the color is representing the state of the work item. So not only it shows you the coverage that you have, but also what is the priority and what is the state of the work item that you're looking at. So you can say, hey, you're saying it's done, but you don't have test cases here, or whatever the case may be, perform the appropriate analysis in Smart Excel. What you can also, the other type of traceability matrix that many people use, actually surprising to me, more people use this than I would have expected, is a horizontal traceability matrix, where you would take a PBI and see how that's decomposed and how that's decomposed further, and sort of it goes on. To me, this one seemed far more efficient. But again, it's good that we're humble enough to realize that we know very little other than certain patterns of thinking, and then we build on those patterns of thinking, say, okay, this is what you can do. Now, with this now done, let's take a look at Outlook. In Outlook, there's certainly the quick query base. You can run a query and you see the results and so on. But the one of the things that we did in here was provided the ability to define backlog management in a slightly different way. So you will see in TFS 2013, what Microsoft has done is they've got a way where you can define, you can do portfolio management, where you can have the feature or even have something, an epic above it, and then sort of drill down to multiple levels. And so we said, what if people want to have many different permutations of how that information should be seen? So what we did was we added this new backlog management view here. And you can then define that in this particular feature to backlog, what we did was we said, okay, so I'm going to have my feature called F1. And for that feature, I'm then going to allow people to define a sub-feature or a PBI. And so we do user story one. And then for this one, I'm further going to define, say, a sub-PBI or impediment. And decompose this. And the way the options you're getting at any point in time is configurable. So you can decide how the thought process evolves. Now, typically, if you're using the one out-of-the-box process templates, from a requirements point of view, there isn't that many things. We have clients, large Fortune 500 clients, that actually have 20 different work item types. And they want to define the evolution of the requirements or the decomposition of the requirements in a very specific way. So you can configure the Outlook view to define how that information should get decomposed. And of course, everybody has it, so you might as well use it, right? So everybody has Outlook there on their computers, or at least most do. All right, so that's one thing. Now, the other thing is that when you look at, when you have a work item selected, what you will see on the right-hand side is a view pane. So in this view pane, unlike in Visual Studio where you have to hit the different tabs to see all the information, we have rendered the information in one horizontal flow, like this one. You can then email this information to somebody and have all this information go to them. Of course, there's rich text support and all of those things in the description and so on as well. You can look at all work items. So this thing doesn't have much in it. So you can look at all work items. You can have a discussion panel. So you have under the history tab, you have the discussion area. So you can start to have your discussion here, add images and so on against the work items directly in Outlook. And then you have the feedback panel. And then you can provide your feedback directly in Outlook, right? The other use case on Outlook is that you may have an email. So you get an email, it's a bug, it's a requirement, it's a user story, it's whatever, and you want to actually store this in TFS as a work item. So you go in, you say, I want to create a work item of this, it should be a PBI, and go. And what it does is it takes the entire body of the email, as rich as it is, and puts it into the description field. The subject ends up being the title of the work item, and then you can go ahead and save it. You can also attach emails as work items. So it just becomes an attachment to an existing work item, as opposed to creating a new one. So you just sort of say, remember you told me this the other day? So it's there from a reference point of view. There's a couple of interesting things that we're actually doing in Outlook is we're adding some panels here on the right-hand side where you can actually see the defect status or test coverage as micrographs right in the grid view of either the queries or the backlog management view. So that's the Outlook solution. Now, of course, if you're doing requirements management, one of the things that starts to become important is baselining. Because without baseline, you don't know what was and what is, and therefore what is the difference. You, of course, know what is, but you just don't know what was. And so in the baselining tool, what you can now do is you can navigate to your project and and as you navigate to the project, have the ability to baseline your project. So here, I've got multiple baselines. Now, one of the things we did was, from a baselining perspective, you don't want everything to be baselined. You may not care for tasks to be baselined. You may want your requirements for sure, user stories. You may want perhaps embeddings if you want to know what problems existed at some point in time. Certain work item types may need to be baselined. So when you create a baseline, you can actually choose which work items do you want to baseline. Once you create the baselines, you can open up a baseline, see the work items they're in and their revision IDs. But what you can also do is you can say, hey, well, what if I were to compare the baseline 2 with baseline 3, and it goes and renders creates a difference between the two. So this is revision 4, I have revision 5 here, and this is a change. There are no changes to other places. And so I can then say, okay, compare these work items. And so what it does is it actually shows you a track change view, like in Word, and says, okay, these are the things that have changed. So the baselining tool currently is not available. It is going to get available in the next few weeks. You'll have the ability to generate reports. So give me a Word document with all the differences in a track change mode view between baseline 1 and baseline 2. We're also building certain visualization directly in the tool, in the web tool, where you can actually see how your work items have evolved over time, as in a Facebook-like timeline of a work item. So its lifespan more visually. When you want to create a new baseline, what you can do is you can go ahead and you can say, hey, you know what, I'm going to create a new baseline. I'm going to select some query that is there. And from the query, I can say, okay, take all of these work items and let me establish a baseline. And then I can give it a baseline X name, and you can baseline it, right? So the idea here is that this is one of the gaps TFS used to have, is you could not baseline work items. And so now this problem is getting resolved as well. The other thing that we hear from some organizations is that they need to be able to perform evergreening of the work items. So they've built a solution, the solution is there, and they want to actually branch a set of work items, create a copy of it, but it references back to the original ones, and then sort of use that as a as sort of for the next revision, next version of their solution. And so this one will also support evergreening use case in baselining. Any questions so far? Yes, please. So the question is, how does Smart Outlook manage multiple projects? So you have the ability to connect to whichever project you want to work on. And so you can certainly connect, or you can write queries in a given project, which are cross-project queries, and therefore be able to view information from different projects. Actually, that reminds me of a point that in the baseline tool, one of the things that you will see is that you will have the ability to copy a work item collection, a work item set, from one collection to another collection, or from one team server to another team server. So if you just want to take all of this information and just move it, it will actually have that ability to do that kind of copy functions. Yes, please. So what you're asking for is actually there with the team tab of Excel. So if you have installed the Visual Studio IDE, there's going to be a team tab where you can actually author directly in Excel and then just publish it to TFS and also refresh it just like I showed you in Word, in Smart Word. So you already have that capability of being able to author in Excel and have bi-directional integration with TFS. The Smart Office Suite is available today. So for that, what you want to do is if you're interested in getting a download of a trial, the place to go is smartoffice.com. Oh, sorry, smartofficefortfs.com. And then just go download.
What about training for all?
Correct. So there's a variety of different videos available online that shows you how to do a bunch of things. You'll also find that there is a user community. So if you click on Find Answer, it takes you to the user community site where you can submit questions and so on. There is formal training available as well. So please feel free to reach out to us. And one of the things we did try very hard to do is to keep it very simple. It is the audience we are trying to serve. It has to be simple. But sometimes I find I fumble with things that are simple. So the help is available in many ways. Yes, please. Right, so it supports TFS 2010 and onwards, including 2013.2. It supports both on-prem and online, so Visual Studio Online, VSO.
What about
Office, for all the products, it supports 2010 and above. Word is the only exception where we support 2007 and above. Yes, please. Right. So what we do is we inherit the user permissions from TFS. So one of the key things we wanted to do was not have any custom configuration required. Right? So if you have some other tool you want to integrate with TFS, you have to do a whole bunch of middleware activities. So one of the things we decided was there's no time for that. Right? So you plug it, you play. Right? All the work items, all the permissions, the workflow. So even if you have state in the work item and you define the state workflow, it actually inherits the state workflow and enforces it in Word. Yes, please. Yeah, it's not a coding tool for sure. It's not a coding tool. I mean, of course, developers, like every other stakeholder, comes in every shape and size and color. So if you want to generate a report that says, give me all my PBIs for a sprint, then you may, but that's not the primary use case of doing that. Yep. Yes, please. Not yet. So it is a separate product today. So there is an MSDN offer for it. So if you go to the MSDN site and search for it, where there's a discounted price for it. But today it is a separate product. And you can either buy individually or you can buy the whole package. No. So again, there is an MSDN Ultimate offer out there that you can look at. Any other question? So you can generate the test cases from Visio, from Smart Visio, and then generate a report in Smart Word. Yeah. Any other question? So, folks, I must tell you a story. So traditionally, we have been a waterfall company. And so, or iterative. Maybe waterfall is a bit harsh. But certainly iterative. And so we would have a six-month cadence. And so when we started to work in Smart Office about a year ago, we started to use Agile. So we said we'll use Scrum. I must tell you, it was the best thing we ever did. And so what our strategy has been is you build a product, you release it quickly. You get feedback. You get feedback and you do things to respond to that feedback. Our original strategy was, well, let's hope that Asif goes to take a shower, he gets an epiphany, and we'll come and build it. And so we are getting away from that. As I said, when I was young and smart, I was a developer. And as I'm getting older, my epiphanies are coming far less frequently. And so what we have essentially done is we have said, the users, tell us what we should do. And so when now we're implementing at large organizations, they have a list of backlog items for us, and we are going through that as fast as we can. Our current cadence is about 6 weeks long. Our hope is to get it to 4 weeks, but if you have tried to do that, you'd probably know it's an uphill battle. It's a tough one. I don't know how Microsoft does it every 3 weeks. But that's the approach. Of course, the message there is you have to engage your stakeholders. A good friend of mine, Bob Youngblood, once said, the process, what we do is we democratize software development. We engage everybody. And the engagement of the community as a constant conversation is a powerful tool. And so whether you're using this approach or any other approach, you should have that constant conversation. So I'll close with a quote from my favorite poet of all times. He's a 13th century Persian poet. His name is Rumi. Anybody heard of Rumi? A few people? Excellent. Rumi is absolutely divine. If you've never read him, please look him up, R-U-M-I. He was actually the bestseller author several years ago. Of course, he died many, many centuries ago. But he was a bestseller, and one of the verses from his poem goes, "Let the beauty you love be what you do." So live long and prosper. Thank you all.